everyone, I, Chirag, along with Mansi, are hosting today's episode of SCMS Speaketh with Ms. Simran Ajwani, our guest speaker. Hello, ma'am.
Hi, guys.
Today, we are going to explore a completely different side of startups. And you know, failures of startups is something that's actually not really spoken about. And to be honest, it does not come easy to people.
That's so true, Mansi. And this is exactly why in this podcast, we are revealing how to deal with failures at different stages of startups.
30-day free returns, jobong.com.
So, Mansi, do you remember this ad?
It's been way too long since I heard Jobong's name, honestly. And I'm sure our listeners will agree to that. And for those who are not aware, it was once an e-commerce major, now not even in the list of fashion brands. So what actually happened with Jobong?
Yes, this is the time we take a dip in the actual case scenario. Let's understand what reasons were involved in the rise and the fall of a major fashion e-commerce store, Jobong. History has witnessed the brutality that e-commerce industries have faced. The competition is tough, the funding is rare, and the market is ferocious. But Jobong feared nothing. Performing at its absolute best, this e-commerce fashion platform was a springboard for the online fashion industry.
If you're wondering what was that B2B giant Jobong, don't mistake it for something nanoscopic. It was the very existence of online fashion. In Jobong's time, it was a $700 million startup. And when online infrastructures were still under development, Jobong was actually selling and making profits all along. The sales were so solid that so many colossal ventures were eyeing for its share. In fact, Amazon wanted to buy it out. Such was the vogue of this brand.
But Mansi, the question here I have is what possibly could have gone wrong with Jobong? There are many reasons to that come to my mind if you think about a brand's failure. It can be a funding problem or an uproaring competition. But getting completely wiped out of the market, it seemed quite strange. In fact, if you try reaching the website of Jobong, you instantly get redirected to Flipkart Fashion or Myntra sometimes. How shocking is that?
It seems you've pondered enough on this, and now is the time to raise the curtains. Let's get to the root of this Jobong chronicle and understand why it failed.
To unveil this narrative, I would like to call upon Ms. Simran Ajwani. Now, Ms. Simran Ajwani has completed her BBA from Symbiosis International University itself in the year 2018 and then received a 100% merit scholarship to pursue Masters in Management from ESCP, Europe Business School.
Professionally, Ms. Ajwani fills not one but many roles, and as a third generation entrepreneur, she's closely observed what success and failures means. As a young entrepreneur at the age of 23, she launched VentureBoss and aimed at making evidence-based entrepreneurship education more accessible. Her aim is to help, train and coach around 1 million young entrepreneurial leaders who solve local challenges in India by 2026.
Done. Oh, well, thank you for the introduction and for inviting me. Well, there are many reasons why startups fail, but in my opinion, there are three main reasons why they fail in India. Well, the first is, I believe they don't have the right mindset. The basics are not clear. For example, a lot of people don't even know the difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur. Well, I mean, since we have, you know, limited time, the key difference is actually innovation. And I feel we have a very limited understanding of what is innovation or don't fully understand it. The second reason I believe is, of course, lack of funds, right? Like that's commonly cited by startups run out of business. But what lack of funds actually means? I feel there are two key things. One is that they don't have profitable unit economics, right? So for example, a Gorillas or, you know, a food quick commerce company can only become profitable on their pitch deck when they show that they have an average basket value of say 30 euros or, you know, 300 rupees, however you want to put it. But this data is almost like an idealistic version of what they believe it should be versus what the data, you know, from customers and researchers is actually telling them. Because in actual, if you see the average basket value, what they had is, you know, somewhere around 12 or 15. Now, and the second point, right, like a lack of funds, what affects it greatly is business models, you know, not having good business models. Now, we have a very limited understanding of business models. If you look at the same Gallant business model navigator, there are 52 ways you can monetize your business. And, you know, how many of these 52 do we really know about in India? So those are the two main reasons. And the third reason is, I would say, there always comes a point in the startup where an entrepreneur has to choose between what's good for me versus what's good for business. And that lack of focus, you know, like that decision-making, that the key question, I feel, leads to the failure of some startups.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for sharing your insight. So continuing to our next question, we would like to know that at what point does one realize that their business is probably, you know, heading towards a dead end? And maybe at that moment, what could be the next step that they could take?
At what point? That's a very interesting question, because entrepreneurs are usually so in love with their ideas, they fail to listen to reason, and they fail to listen to, you know, signs of that the business is going southward. And naturally so, right? Like, as an entrepreneur, when you're working on an idea for 12, 14 hours a day, you put in so much effort. It feels like, you know, it's your baby. If you see the movie Kingsman, right? Like, they have this puppy that they carry around. And why shooting that puppy is so difficult? Because you get attached to it. So at what point do entrepreneurs realize? I think sometimes not even after the startup is bankrupt. But at what point can you realize, you know, as probably as an employee, or as, you know, someone who's invested in the startup, is when decision-making is usually delayed. When, you know, decision-making processes are set in place, but decisions are being delayed due to lack of funds, or, you know, some other reasons being cited. And the second, I would say, at what point you realize is when people start avoiding meetings, or people basically start avoiding, you know, showing their face. And what could be done? So there are two, I would say, key principles, you know, of effectuation by Professor Sara Saraswati, which remind me of what can be done. So one is, before you even start your business, you should have an idea of what is affordable loss. So the principle of affordable loss.
Correct.
Affordable loss means having your own set boundaries for the amount of resources that you're willing to invest in your idea. So when I say resources, it's not just financial resources. It could also mean, you know, time and effort. So for example, for my startup idea, I gave it 2 months. I said, if my idea doesn't work in 2 months, I move on. So knowing that idea of, you know, like when you've put in 2 months and what success should mean at that level for you, if it's not there, having the heart to walk away and say, I failed. And the second principle that, you know, of what can be done when you face challenges, or when you face, you know, difficulties, is actually the principle of lemonade. So the lemonade principle means, you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. That means looking at problems as opportunities for change. So this comes back to my, you know, first point that I was talking about, having the right mindset when starting out your business, or, you know, knowing about these things is really helpful in understanding when your business is going wrong and what you can do when your business is going wrong.
I'm sure our listeners will definitely live by the principles that you just explained. So you mentioned your startup before this. Could you let us know what motivated you to co-found VentureBoss, and while establishing your startup, did you feel defeated at any instance?
Yeah, of course. So let me first begin with, you know, the first part of the question, what led me to found VentureBoss? Growing up in a business family, I believe that being an entrepreneur was in my blood. You know, to give you an example, I learned about profit and loss at the age of probably 6 or 7. And I learned about it before I learned about cartoons. Now, it's so ingrained in me that at the age of, you know, I think 16, I was already bubbling with my own startup ideas and business ideas. I thought of this great idea that I was so invested in and I cared so much about as a 16-year-old. But I didn't find the right resources or the right support, or, you know, people basically told me that you're too young to achieve what you dream. And I didn't pursue my idea at the age of 16. Today, that idea is basically what edtech startups are doing, right? Like Byju's and we know that how big it's become. So why I founded my startup is because I didn't want any other 16-year-old to have that feeling that, you know, when you have a great business idea, what's the first step? Unfortunately, our education system does not teach us that, right? Like, what's the first step if you think you have a great idea? So the aim of my startup is to make entrepreneurship education more accessible for young adults. And my aim is not to, like, you know, have business owners or entrepreneurs. Yeah, of course, it would be great to have that. But my vision of entrepreneurship is based more on the entrepreneur mindset. So you can be working as an employee at a company, but still have an entrepreneurial mindset. And now coming to the second part of the question, right? Like, when did I feel defeated, or like, with that I felt defeated? So when I launched my startup, we taught, you know, 98 students from 22 different countries. And I just participated in an international business plan competition through my university for it. Luckily, I don't even know how, but we reached the top 6 finalists, you know, out of 242 teams that were participating. But we lost over there. So there was, you know, there's this idea that you believe so much in, and you put it out for critical feedback. And every day you're hearing from people, you know, critical questions and key feedback and actually criticism by saying, why did you do this? Why do you choose that? And your idea is going to fail. Here are 10 different reasons why it's going to fail. So you feel defeated, of course, you know, listening to that kind of feedback. But as an entrepreneur, I've realized that that's actually more valuable feedback than anything else. So if I, for example, go to a friend and tell them, hey, tell me my idea is great, right? Like, this is my idea. And your friends are likely to agree with you because nobody really tells you on your face why they think your idea is going to fail. And that's not often useful. So now I, in fact, critically seek feedback, you know. When I tell people about my idea and they say, oh, wow, that's a great idea, I say, but please tell me where I'm wrong. Please tell me why you think my startup could fail. Or, you know, please tell me why you think this idea would fail. So defeated, I think you feel when you find people who don't agree with your idea or who don't believe in your dreams. Like I was told as a 16-year-old, you know, that your dreams are too big. But those are exactly the kind of people that you should keep around you every day, because they will remind you of your dream every day. And if you are, you know, that motivated towards what you want to do, they are the people who will keep you on the right path. So, yeah, that would be my 2 cents on this.
Thank you so much, ma'am, and thank you for joining us at our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It was really nice, and looking forward to, you know, what you come up with.